Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and we wish to welcome you to this Tuesday edition of Stand in the Gap Today. And wherever you might be, we want to thank you so very, very much for the pleasure of your company. And along with Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl, and it's just a delight to have each and every one of you with us today. Dave and Sam, I don't know if you guys realize this or not, but we were busy overnight, the three of us.
We were? What yes. were we doing?
Well, we were quite busy overnight. This morning at prayer breakfast, my dad told me that he had a dream about the three of us, and we were in a church. Actually, it was the home church that I came from out in western Pennsylvania, Fayette County, and we were conducting a revival meeting. The church was packed. They had people all over the church, and I was preaching. Dave, you weren't preaching this time, but I was preaching. And so as I was preaching, there was this one fellow sitting there in the pew. Every time I would say something, he would heckle me. And finally, at one point, I said, "Now, if you don't sit down and shut up, I'm going to have my dad remove you." And, of course, you know, Dad said, "I don't know why he picked me, this little old 82-year-old man, to do it." But I guess I felt safe about that. Well, this guy would not settle down. And so, Dave, you stood up and you said, "I think we ought to sing a song." So Dad was the song leader, and so I said, "Dad, lead us in the song." He said, "I can't find a hymn book." Well, Dave, you came along and said, "Well, I think probably what we're going to do is just sing out of the Bible." And so Dad said, "Well, where should we sing out of the Bible?" And Sam, you said 2 Chronicles 7:14. So we tried to sing 2 Chronicles 7:14. And I guess we did a pretty good job because the church was packed with people and we gave the invitation and everybody, including the heckler, came forward and got saved. So how do you like that?
Well,
Gary, got a
Go ahead.
Is this a real dream your dad had or is this a made up story?
No, he told us he was the speaker at our prayer breakfast this morning and he used that as a part of his message to the men. A real dream.
Well, no wonder I woke up tired this morning.
Yeah, you were leading us in second chronic.
that's great to know, Gary. Busy even when we're asleep. So tell your dad just to continue to have revelations like this. You know, it may be good.
It may be good. You know, the interesting thing about it is that little church back there in western Pennsylvania, they used to have some great revival meetings. And, of course, my dad got saved through one of them. So he had us doing work we never knew we were doing, guys. I just thought I'd share that with you here today.
Well, Gary, I have one question before we get serious here. What did your dad have for dinner last night?
You know, one of the men asked him that. He said it wasn't what he had for dinner. He had Boston cream pie at 10:30 before he went to bed.
That'll do it every time. Boston cream pie will do it.
And that's so that's our point of edification for today. Ladies and gentlemen, there's just something that I received here within the past hour that I'd like to share with you because we realize that most of our listeners are here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And this comes from the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. And it says this, and I'll just read it to you, that a constitutional amendment is being introduced in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, which would take away our right to vote for judges for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, the Superior Court, and the Commonwealth Court. The amendment, which is referred to as merit selection, would establish a secretive appointment process for putting judges on the bench. Now, Sam, you've been involved with government here in Pennsylvania for many, many years. And, of course, this is something, as you said before we went on the air, that seemingly continues to stick up its head from time to time. What do you have to say about this? Do you think that that is going to become law at some point in time? What are your thoughts on that subject?
Well, Gary, I mean, it has something that's been that's come down the pike, and it's been offered and proffered, put in that perspective, for a long time. The points for which those who support marriage selection will use to justify why we need to change from what is, in fact, right now a public election where the voters elect judges to having this one where they call, it sounds good, merit selection. It makes it sound like because they deserve it. That's what that's what they're trying to position. The reason that they're wanting to do it is because, in the end of the day, the legal lobby and many who are in that system of judicial evaluation, and I would say to some extent judicial control, from that perspective, believe that you cannot rely on the public to be intelligent enough to make a determination on who is truly qualified, and that a public election tends to move towards those who can make their case the best, the most popular, all of that kind of thing, but not necessarily those who are properly equipped legally to be able to make right judgments and evaluations according to the law. Now, to that extent, anybody listening what I just said would say, well, that makes sense to me. But on the other hand, what you have is that what you do is you give up the ability for the public to be able to weigh in, be able to get to know the judges and that kind of thing. And you put it into the hands of a very, very small number of people who are very, very much given to, I would say, we talked about it yesterday, bribery, but special interest. Those who are in favored positions ended up getting the nod. And at the end of the day, are the public more benefited by that kind of a thing or not? And the answer is not necessarily so. So I believe more often than not, really, this tends to be a power grab where it tends to favor a handful of people who can make extraordinarily great decisions based and not even be open to the public. And to compare it, Gary and Dave, it is really the same kind of process that is used for the appointment of federal judges in the federal court system across the country, which we all know these independently appointed rogue federal officials are the ones that have overturned the cases on marriage. They are the ones that have overturned the cases on all kinds of things and have thrown the whole state sovereignty issue when it comes to marriage, all that kind of, they've thrown all of this up in there. And these individuals were not elected. They were appointed by a very, very small process. So that's what I would liken it to. And I think it's something we ought to be aware of and bears more discussion about.
Well, who is it that's behind this particular type of a bill? I mean, it sounds very liberal and very big government philosophically to me. So who really is behind this type of a thing?
Well, generally speaking, it tends to be the organized legal lobby, the lawyers, generally. Those who are involved in running the court, many times the upper level court members, the Supreme Court members, often have been ones who have led the way on this. But anyways, they've attempted really to get a hold of the whole legal system. And so this is a consolidation effort, which I think we should bear down on that.
Well, we may be talking more about this later on, ladies and gentlemen. We just wanted to bring it to you today. We'll be back with more of Stand in the Gap today, right after this, so stay tuned.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Every year in the months of March through June, lobbyists are swarming the Pennsylvania Capitol building, and there are frequent rallies and demonstrations, sometimes multiple times a day. It's all because it's budget time, and special interests are looking for their piece of the pie, or should I say, our tax dollars. And so it was last week when Planned Parenthood bussed in demonstrators to demand even more money from the state for their activities. They already get millions, and it's only reasonable to believe that those dollars eventually end up promoting their biggest activity, which is abortion. We don't think Planned Parenthood should get any tax dollars, which is why we took to the Capitol last week to expose the truth about Planned Parenthood and abortion in Pennsylvania. You can find out more by downloading our special report at the website abortionispersonal.com. That's abortionispersonal.com. And you can find out about us at pafamily.org.
With God's hand upon him, Nehemiah pursued the impossible. Rebuild broken walls, repair burned gates, restore a lost national identity. But Nehemiah had what few leaders have, a vision bigger than himself and a faith in God that wouldn't waver. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. At PPN, we encourage pastors to set their vision high, focus on God's calling and God's equipping, and boldly lead their people forward. Whether opposed by people, circumstances, or discouragement, Nehemiah did what godly leaders do. He went to his knees in prayer. He repented for his sins and the sins of the people. He beseeched God to hear the prayer of his servants who feared his name. Then he encouraged the people to work. Despite the opposition, the walls were rebuilt, gates repaired, identity found, and the worship of God restored. And you can do the same. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network.
Sign up as a partner and learn more about us at papastors.net.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
I love the way God used Philip's life to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. One day, Philip was preaching, obviously, very powerfully, in the city of Samaria. It says in Acts chapter 8 that God used him in a powerful way, that the entire city was rejoicing at the miracles God was doing. You know, how awesome that must have been, not just for Philip, but as confirmation of stewardship for the people who gave Philip food and shelter and supported him so that he might do this mighty work for the kingdom.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl. I just want to make a statement with regard to that former subject we were talking about, and that is the idea that there is a bill in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives which would take away our right to vote for judges for the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, the Superior Court, and the Commonwealth Court. And the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is actually asking us to contact our representatives, and particularly those who are on the House Judiciary Committee, and urge them to oppose this so-called merit selection of judges legislation. Tell them that you do not want your right to vote for judges taken away. And I want to give two phone numbers here just for the sake of the information. And Sam, you might want to help me in pronouncing this one fellow's name, but the Judiciary Chair is Ron Marcisco. I'm going to give you his number in a moment. And the Democratic chair is Joseph Petracca. Is that the correct pronunciation, Sam? Well, we don't have Sam with us here for some reason or another.
Well, I'm sorry. It's Joe Petracca.
Okay.
And it's Ron Marsico. So
Marsico.
Those two.
Okay.
Marsico.
Ron Marsico and Joseph Petracca. And here are their phone numbers. Ron Marsico is 717-783-2014. That's 717-783-2014. And Joseph Petracca is 717-787-5142. 717-787-5142. And then, of course, call your own representative as well. But just let them know that you do not want your right to vote for judges taken away from you. You know, it just seems like every time we turn around, there's something else corrupt going on in government. Yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, we talked about how the United States representative from the 9th District here in Pennsylvania, Bill Schuster, is involved in a... Well, he's walking on thin ice in the sense that he is dating a lady. He says he has a personal and private relationship with airline lobbyist Shelley Rubino. And, of course, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. And, of course, the powers to be are telling us that it's not necessarily illegal, but it might certainly be unethical. But what has just come out here in the last day, regarding the information I have anyway, is that Rubino's group, along with its various member executives and their companies, Sam, donated at least $46,000 to Schuster's 26 campaign fund, and which is basically about 10% of everything that came into his coffers. And I don't know. I mean, I think this thing, yesterday we said it smells like a rat. It's getting just a little bit more smelly. And, you know, I think that this is a situation that is not only unethical, but I believe it's something that could bring Bill Schuster down. I mean, his own father, Bud Schuster, resigned Congress out of a similar situation of having very close relationships and even an affair, as we understand, with a lobbyist. And here we've got the same thing going on. Would you think that Bill Schuster is seeing the last of his days in Congress, Sam?
Well, Gary, it may. I mean, obviously, there have been individuals in Congress and the Senate who have had perhaps more grave things, even for that, and stick around, and they're still there. I think of Hillary Clinton and others, you know. But on the other hand, this is the kind of thing that in the past have taken down a lot of people. And because things have been swirling for some time, Congressman Schuster is certainly under fire, and he may not escape from this.
Well, I'm sure it's something that many people here in the 9th District, which is around Altoona, and that's why we're making it an issue, because we are heard on two radio stations in this district, and we are just trying to keep people informed as to what's going on. But the fact of the matter is, there is a lot of corruption that goes on in government, and you mentioned Hillary Clinton. Well, you know, it just seems like she's having more and more being thrown at her at some of the corruption that she's been involved with. The New York Times reported yesterday that the book that is set for release on May 5th, that we talked about yesterday, will make new claims about donations to the Clinton Foundation by foreign donors, and specifically, the book claims that foreign entities that donated to the foundation in turn received favors from the Clinton State Department. As a matter of fact, the author of the book, a fellow by the name of Peter Schweitzer, reportedly claims to have found, quote, a pattern of financial transactions involving the Clintons that occurred contemporaneous with favorable U.S. policy decisions benefiting those providing the funds. And, of course, that particular book is going to be coming out, as I said, on May the 5th. It's entitled The Clinton Cash, The Untold Story of How and Why Foreign Governments and Businesses Helped Make Bill and Hillary Rich. This kind of corruption is going on. And Dave Kistler, you are very, very much following a situation where even President Barack Obama is involved right now in a high level of corruption, in my opinion, in his relationship with Iran. Do you want to share that with our listeners, please?
Yeah, Gary, I'd be delighted to. Earlier today, it came out that the Obama administration is considering giving to the country of Iran $50 billion in what is being called a signing bonus for agreeing to a nuclear deal. And, of course, this nuclear deal has been a hot item in the news. Well, in order evidently to lure Iran to the table to pick up the pen and sign what will be a final deal, the State Department, the Obama administration, is offering them a $50 billion with a B, signing bonus to get this deal done. And this, Gary, is in addition to the tens of billions of dollars that the president wants released immediately upon the signing of this deal. And I'm talking about tens of billions of dollars in frozen assets that, because of the sanctions that we have enacted against the country of Iran, because it's considered a state sponsor of terrorism, he wants those assets unfrozen. So tens of billions of dollars would flow immediately into the coffers of Iran. $50 billion would be given to them in the form of a signing bonus. And, Gary, I've got a question. Do we not have any morals, any dignity, or any sanity left in the United States of America? This is absolutely unbelievable. It is bribery at the highest levels of government being proposed by the Obama administration. It's absolutely unbelievable that the president, the White House, the State Department is proposing this kind of preposterous idea.
Well, this idea of a signing bonus that Obama is putting out there just sounds like he's the head of a baseball team and he's signing a baseball player. I mean,
yeah, Gary, I was just going to say that this is not a professional sports here. We're talking about our own national security. We're talking about global security. I mean, this is absurd. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely absurd.
Sam Rohr, of course, you've been involved with government for many, many years, and we hear about things like this from time to time, and it's appalling. My question is, how often do things like this happen in government, particularly on the federal level, and we don't even know about it? Obviously, if we don't know about it, you know, we don't know about it. But the suspicion, you know, I'm talking about the concept. Does this kind of a thing go on much, much more than we would believe? I suspect it does.
Well, Gary, it does. And unfortunately, for a long time, not just the Obama administration, but prior to that, it has been known. You travel the world and you talk to dignitaries from other nations around the world. They know and they will tell you that by and large, for a generation, perhaps maybe not quite that long, but for many administrations anyways, we've attempted to exercise the will of the United States, by and large, through the use of buying favors. We use billions of dollars of appropriation and loans and grants to countries around the world to buy their allegiance or to influence them for one reason or another, and it grows very weak and it grows very lame. When you do not lead and having nations want to align with you and come along because of your moral leadership, but instead try to influence their actions by bribery, which is exactly what this is, the entire role of our nation is diminished. Now, this whole affair with Iran is all juxtaposed, you know, by the mere fact, I mean, today the Iranian ships are heading towards Yemen, and the Obama administration has sent one of our aircraft carriers down there to theoretically head off the Iranian ships who may be providing aid to the Yemen, to the Yemen government and the rebels there. And you'd say, on one hand, you're going to give them $50 billion to do exactly what they do as a terrorist organization, but you're going to send our ships down there to theoretically show some force that they shouldn't be doing. But I mean, you talk about a policy that is upside down, twisted, turned, making no sense, as Dave said, altogether. None of the policy coming out makes sense because you can't determine who's your friend other than the fact, you know, Israel's not our friend, and increasingly our own American people are not friends.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this reminds us that we as American citizens must do what we can to get this nation back to biblical principles and back to the United States Constitution. That would take away corruption. And until we do that, corruption is going to grow. We'll be back with more right after this on Stand in the Gap Today.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. People affected by the Boston Marathon bombing are taking the stand, with jurors now deciding for or against the death penalty.
Prosecutors starting their presentation characterizing the crimes of Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev as unbearable. Speaking about the four killed, the prosecutor telling jurors, "You need to know and understand why their lives matter." Earlier, the judge saying, "It is impossible for me to overstate the importance of the decision before you."
Fox News Radio's Bill Marcus. Tsarnaev's lawyers argue his older brother was the mastermind. He died during the manhunt. In Yemen,
Saudi-led airstrikes targeting Shiite Houthi rebels in the western city of Ibe. Officials say Houthi fighters were gathered to go to Aden as reinforcements in the battle against forces loyal to ousted American-backed President Abed Rabo Mansour Hadi.
Fox News Radio's Jessica Gallagher. Fox News, we report. You decide.
Hey, Grandma, could you help me with this Common Core lesson?
I just can't get it. They are teaching us to use emotional words to get our way. In my Voices workbook, see this question? My mom always nags me or asks me to clean my room. I chose asks me, and it was wrong. They want me to say she nagged me, but I didn't think that was fair or nice. Why was I wrong?
Oh, honey, you were right. That isn't nice. These Common Core lessons are awful.
Get Common Core out of your state. If you would just make this your project, you could change the country.
Learn more about the Federal Common Core and PA Core standards and call your representatives today and ask them to stop the national takeover of education. Go to knowpacommoncore.com or call Richard at 484-678-2236. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message.
Working for you. WFYL.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources, with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, along with Sam Rohr and Dave Kistler. I'm Gary Dahl. We are delighted to have you with us. There is corruption that goes on in government, and this is something that we as citizens of the United States of America must be very, very concerned about. And we need to pray for men and women who are in elected positions, because it's very, very easy for them to go to Washington or Harrisburg or whatever state capital and want to do right. But before you know it, because of the pressure that is there, they end up getting hoodwinked into some of these nasty situations. And so it's important that we pray for them and that we encourage them to stand for truth and righteousness. And, sometimes the question comes to my mind, where is justice in government? Sam, just as a carryover from our last segment here, Is that a valid question to ask? You know, where is justice in government today?
Gary, it is a valid question to ask, because at the end of the day, what does every citizen, every employee, every person who navigates across this country, I mean, what do we all hope for? And that is to be treated, most of the time we say fairly, but really the word is justly, according to some predictable law that that has an underpinning underneath of it that that allows for the fact that each person is not guilty until proven innocent, and that they can have a set of laws that are on the books that they can operate by and be predictable. I mean, all of these things are part of justice. Biblically, you know, God defines justice as a balance between truth and mercy. So it's the truth of the law, and then there's the aspect of you know, not using it harshly against people, but using it so that is in fact fair. So, and that is the primary role of government, to enact justice. And when government or any authority chooses and turns and takes authority and turns it upside down, where what is morally good is now condoned to be bad, and what is bad is termed condoned to be good, which is increasingly what's happening, then in fact what you have is injustice, and the people feel that. They always do, and this is what's happening. So the distortion of justice in a nation goes right to the very heart of the purpose of government, and ultimately the result is that the people end up not trusting government. They tend to despise it. It makes it very good to honor those who are in positions of authority, and it actually unwinds, if you can put it that perspective, it unwinds the undoing of self-government as we have it in this representative republic. Justice must be maintained, or you cannot maintain freedom.
Absolutely. And it, ladies and gentlemen, we just need to pray that as we are approaching this next presidential election, that God will raise up a leader, a president who is a just individual. And of course, we're going to be talking about that more and more as we get closer to the 2016 election. Just to shift gears a little bit, we received a letter that was sent out to pastors by Senator Ted Cruz, who is running for the presidency of the United States of America, that, in my opinion, is a breath of fresh air, and I think is an act of justice to a certain degree, nevertheless. But to set this up, on Tuesday, April the 28th, which is a week from today, the United States Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in favor of same-sex marriage. And tomorrow we're going to be having on with us Matthew Stashman, who is from Altoona, Pennsylvania here, who is going to be taking a group of people to the March for Marriage that will be happening this coming Saturday. We'll be talking more about that tomorrow, the Lord willing. But the question that Ted Cruz really asks and deals with in his letter is, how will the American church respond to this the arguments that the Supreme Court is going to hear next week on same-sex marriage? And Dave Kistler, if you would just share with us components of that letter to encourage our people and to challenge our pastors, I'd appreciate it, sir.
Gary, I'd be delighted to. Ted Cruz said this, quote, "The prophet Daniel described the people who know their God as people who do two things. Number one, they display strength. And number two, they take action." He says, how can the church rise to the occasion in this situation? Along with my friend David Lane in the American Renewal Project, I urge you to consider doing the following things. Number one, preach about biblical marriage on Sunday, April 26, which is this coming Sunday. We know that marriage is intended to be a sacred, beautiful, and nourishing thing. If you do not influence your congregation and their understanding of marriage, who will fill the void? Hollywood? Divorce courts? And then Ted encourages pastors to do a second thing, and that is lead prayer services on Tuesday, April 28. He says, prayer moves our God to intervene in history. Prayer softens our hearts and brings us into alignment with the heart of God. The church has not shared the truth about marriage well, and it's time to repent and commit ourselves to courage on this front. And then he says this, Gary, and this is an amazing statement. Regardless of what happens at the Supreme Court or anywhere else, we know that the truth will never be obsolete. The union of a man and woman in marriage will always be relevant. People will continue to need marriage and desire it because we are made in the image of God, creatures who value authentic companionship and intimate connection. And Gary, you know, those words coming from a potential nominee for president of the United States. How long has it been since we've heard that kind of clarion call for pastors to stand up and speak? How long has it been since we've heard that kind of clear description of biblical truth relative to the issue of marriage coming from the pen of a potential nominee for president of the United States? It's been quite some time. In fact, I would say that kind of language, you'd have to go back to the Reagan years to find the clarity with which Ted Cruz is speaking. And again, I'm not endorsing a candidate here. I'm just saying it is beyond refreshing to have a candidate out there that speaks the truth the way Ted Cruz does. And again, this is all in regard to the next Tuesday when this critical landmark decision will be taking place there at the United Supreme Court. What comes out of the court relative to this, Gary, will potentially change the entirety of the United States of America on so many levels. So we need to pray much between now and next Tuesday. And Gary, at some point, we need to share with our listeners how the court makes the decision, because a lot of people think, well, it won't be announced till June. So we've got from next Tuesday till June to pray about this. In all actuality, we do not.
Well, why don't you share that with our people right now?
Well, I'd be glad to. What happens is next Tuesday, each side of this case will be given 20 minutes to present what's called oral arguments. Each side will probably get two sentences, three sentences into their oral argument, and then they're interrupted by the nine justices who pepper them with questions, and you spend the majority of your 20 minutes answering questions that are thrown at you by the members of the high court. The court members already know the case well, so listening to your oral arguments are not something necessarily they want to do. They want to see if you know what your side of the case well and if you can persuade them, so they just pepper each side with questions. And then after each side has 20 minutes, Gary, that's it. The case is over as far as the oral argument portion of it. And then within the next 5 to 7 days, and friends, it's vitally important you understand this, within the next 5 to 7 days, the nine members of the Supreme Court will meet in secret. No one else is allowed in the room. They will cast their ballot relative to this issue of marriage. And so what I'm saying is, in 5 to 7 days after next Tuesday, a decision will have been made by the members of the Supreme Court. Now, that decision is not announced until June. And because this is such a controversial thing, it will probably be announced on the last day of this particular court session. That is, it will be announced the day that the session ends. And the reason they do that on controversial cases is so they can flee the scene of the accident and not have to deal with all the pressure from answering questions on a controversial case. But 5 to 7 days after next Tuesday, the decision will have already been made. So, folks, we've got a little over a week and a half to bombard heaven with our prayers and do what we can do relative to this vitally important case.
Well, absolutely. And I appreciate what Senator Ted Cruz is asking pastors to do. And once again, that is to preach about biblical marriage on Sunday, April the 26th, and then lead prayer services on Tuesday, April the 28th. That last paragraph that is in that letter, Brother Dave, is very impressive as well, where he says that leaves us only one question. Will we be on the right side of history and the side occupied by the authority of history? Otherwise, we will fall victim to the fashions of the times. Sam, you know, that's quite a strong statement. And I hate to say this, but I fear that we will fall to the fashions of the times. And we need to prevent that as much as possible, but we're headed that way.
Well, we are headed that way. And in the context of our discussion here today, leadership, that kind of a letter, is the type of leadership that is needed. That's the type of leadership, character, integrity, the focus on truth that we must hear from those who expect or would like to be considered as a presidential candidate. But yes, at the trend and the direction that we are going, if in fact the pastors and pulpits do not stand up and others, I believe that this court is going to rule the opposite direction, and we will be on the wrong side of history.
So, pastors, this is a very important time for you to stand for biblical truth and allow the Spirit of God to use that not only in your congregation but throughout the nation. We'll be back with more right after this. Stay tuned.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Mark Twain, a river measurement meaning 12 feet deep, was the pen name of Samuel Langhorne Clemens, who died this day, April 21st, 1910. Growing up along the Mississippi, he left school at age 12 when his father died and became a printer's apprentice. He piloted steamboats, but the war between the states suspended all river traffic. Famous for such works as Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, he talked Ulysses S. Grant into writing his Civil War memoirs. In his classic style, Mark Twain remarked, "If the Ten Commandments were not written by Moses, then they were written by another fellow of the same name."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, "If having pleased the Almighty Ruler of the Universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to His divine interposition." Without God, liberty will not last. A quote from Thomas Jefferson.
Join me, Carla Dedessi, here every Friday from 8 until 9 for Your Family Matters. This is going to be an epic year, 2015, for Your Family Matters. We are going to continue to protect your family, your faith, while we are having fun. We're going to bring cutting-edge news to you. The current events, current resources and tools that are going to give you the best family ever. So strap on your seatbelt and join me for this wild ride in 2015 on Your Family Matters every Friday morning. Don't miss us.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Thomas Jefferson, 1800.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. "In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot."
As stated by Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I would venture to say, at least this is my opinion, and maybe some of you would disagree with that, but when we would get to heaven, we would find out who's right. But I would think, seriously, that the number one enemy of the Christian in the world today, at least active enemy of the Christian in the world today, is ISIS. And it seems like every day when we turn around, there's more information coming out about the wickedness and the deception of ISIS. But Sam, when it comes down to it, ISIS is a group that really wants to control everything, and they are moving quickly to impose total cultural, societal, and jurisprudence upon, you know, individuals, not only over there in the Middle East, but anywhere and everywhere that they can. I'm wondering if you might just comment a little bit how it seems like ISIS is trying to just take total control of the world and the people emotionally and spiritually and every other way.
Well, Gary, I mean, in a number of different ways. One, very clearly, the threats against the destruction of the Western world, the United States as the great Satan, Israel, everyone is very much fully aware of that. And that is something that has been there really for a long time. It's obviously coming in a much more aggressive fashion. However, the recent rise of ISIS, which takes and pulls together the most dedicated portions of the Muslim faith, and causes them to work out and impact their fundamental religious beliefs as they're doing it, is something that we watch each day with horror. Their goal is the establishment of a new caliphate. It's the restoration of the Ottoman Empire. World domination is the control, and they're going about it in a very clever and systematic way. Part of it is infiltrate America, infiltrate Europe, and by population birth and all of that kind of thing, you get to the point where you can ultimately take over. But taking over is the goal, and you said that very, very correctly. What's happening in the Middle East, something just of note, is the fact that they are very purposely, and there's recent articles written about this, where they are within their area of ISIS control. Part of it's in Iraq, and part of it's in Syria, and part of where they're going there, they are moving very, very quickly to impose what they call complete control. They are saying, so that they can prove to the world that they are able to bring law and order out of chaos. Now, it's interesting that they are the ones creating the chaos. They're the ones creating the hostility, and they're going to move forward now. And what they're putting together is a jurisprudence system, the legal system, trying to put together the cultural system. They're actually now beginning to issue birth certificates and taking care of vaccinations. All of those things that you would construe to be a part of a normal culture and society, they are attempting to do to prove their legitimacy. It just so happens that Sharia law and the legitimacy says, if you don't agree with us, we'll either kill you or you will bow in submission and pay a tax to us. It is not to be construed as a normal culture nor a normal system, but this is what they're quickly moving to do to prove to the world that they can bring chaos, bring order out of the chaos that they have created. It's very, very interesting what is taking place.
Well, it is, and it's taking place in so many ways. You know, we learned that last summer when the ISIS fighters swept through the Iraqi city of Mosul, that when they took power in that city, the leaders wanted to show how they could bring stability, allowing daily life to resume. And so they quickly reopened the University of Mosul. And when they did that, they radically changed the curriculum. For instance, they actually banned certain subjects such as democracy and political thought. It's interesting. They banned hotel management and tourism and archaeology. And so it almost seems that in their effort to take over the culture, that they are changing facts and figures as we know to be real in culture. Would you say?
Well, they are exactly, and that's why part of their justification, again, this is a very, very failed notion. It is upside down from anything anybody listening to this broadcast would term to be normal. See, when they went in and they've been systematically going into Iraq and other areas, they've been taking over and destroying historical artifacts, old buildings, remembrances from the past, anything that was not, in fact, a part of what would be Muslim worship. They're destroying and eradicating history, they're saying, so as to remove the sources of idolatry, as if looking to the past and looking to history is idolatry. But again, what they're doing is purging. They're attempting to purge the truth, purge history, purge certainly Christians and Jews, purge the God of the Bible. That's what it's all about. And it is not in any way to be construed as equivalent in any way to any normal system of government. So they are, it's deep, it's sweeping, and they are moving broadly to, again, I say, purge any vestige of truth, Bible, God, Christianity, Judaism. Purge it from anything under their control. That's why, it's partly why they're so very dangerous.
And of course they are very deceptive too, because the information that we have leads us to know or to understand that one of the general themes for ISIS, whenever they seize control over a new area, is to portray themselves as being more just than the previous administration, more fair to the inhabitants than the previous ruler was or whatever. And, for example, in Syria, the first thing ISIS did was lower the price of bread. And so, you know, this is much about winning over the population, about its religious rulings. And, you know, David Kistler, and our time's getting short here, but every now and then, and in fact, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, we will hear people say, well, we are here in the United States of America. ISIS isn't anything we need to worry about. My question is, do we need to worry about it? And what can we do to guard ourselves against the rapid expanse of what ISIS is doing?
Well, Gary, we definitely need to worry about this. This is a legitimate concern, not just for those in the Middle East, but certainly for the United States of America. Gary, what I am hearing from some of my contacts up on Capitol Hill is that they are thoroughly entrenched already into the citizenry of the United States, waiting for their opportunity. And this is not sounding an unnecessary alarm. I'm just trying to say what I am being told, and that is that there are ISIS entities here already. And so we need to be eternally vigilant. We need to pay attention to what's going on around us. And we need to communicate the truth about what Islam is and what its goals for global domination are. ISIS is but one branch, one arm, one spoke of the entire ideology that is Islam. But make no mistake about it, Islam in its entirety is bent on global domination.
Well, it is. And so oftentimes today we find that people don't realize that, they don't understand that, because they have succumbed to the belief that Islam is a peaceful religion, and it's far from it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for being with us on today's edition of Stand in the Gap Today. The Lord willing, we will be back tomorrow at this same time on this same station. Until then, on behalf of David Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl. God bless you. Keep looking.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler, brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.